Hello, this is Sharon with the Pantograph, dated Wednesday, June 20th, 2018. We will begin with today's reading on the front page with an article entitled, Loved Ones Share Grief, Seek Answers at Vigil. The Reverend Melvin Kimbrough said the escalation of shooting deaths in the past decade or so has spawned a sort of ritual, a vigil at which loved ones share their grief and try to make sense of tragedy. We try to find a peaceful way to pay tribute to them and find some love, something to take away from this, said the uncle of Corey D. Jackson, 22, one of three men killed by gunfire Monday afternoon at an apartment building at 311 Riley Drive, Bloomington. Nathaniel A. Pena, 22, and Juan C. Perez Macedo, 33, also were killed, and a four-year-old boy, identified by relatives as one of Pena's two sons, was left in stable condition at a Peoria hospital with a gunshot wound, police said. About 200 people gathered Tuesday night at the scene of the shooting, many holding blue, white, red, black, and gold Mylar balloons that they later released into the clearing sky. Many hugged and shared tears, while others stood still in deep silence. Some lighted tea light candles on the sidewalk in front of the building, which still was cordoned off with yellow crime scene tape. The scene was similar to a vigil held June 11th in the 1200 block of Orchard Road, Bloomington, which honored two people killed and two wounded in gunfire at a party the night before. Natalie Pena described her twin brother Nathaniel and Jackson, who went by CJ, as close friends who grew up together since their days at Bloomington Junior High School. Her brother lived at the Riley Building, and Jackson was there, as he often was, playing video games when the shooting happened, relatives said. Nate had a contagious smile, his sister said, describing him as a loving, full-time father. He had the biggest heart for everyone. Jackson's aunt, Stanita Major, added, "They had the same personality. They did everything together. They loved their kids." Kira Hurd, mother of Jackson's two-year-old daughter, Kaloni K.K. Jackson, agreed. "He was all about his daughter," Hurd said. Perez Macedo was a neighbor, they said. Alan Chambers, who said he knew the victims as a junior football league coach and as a father figure to many young people in the community, spoke passionately to the crowd about stepping up as a community to end gun violence. "The only people who can stop us, who can stop this, is us," he said. "If we don't stop burying our kids, we have to stop this cycle now." "We shouldn't be burying our kids," he said. "They should be burying us." He described how he once was part of the problem, but worked to change his own life. He described a 2010 photo of a group of his friends and how three of them are dead now. "If we let them take our kids, we ain't got nothing left," he said. Kimbrough, who led the group in prayers for comfort, peace, and healing, later told the Pantograph, "These lives should not be lost in vain. We need to keep studying and learning what keeps putting our kids in this situation with gun violence." He said the lack of opportunities, jobs, and the resources that create both contribute to the problem. "Without them, we settle for these types of situations, and the negative will always come in," he said. Chambers agreed, saying, "There's nothing for teens to do." In the face of such grief, Kimbrough said, people need to dig down and find their true character, that love we have in common. Let love in and get on the right track and stay on the right track, Kimbrough said. With God, if you stay in love, you will. Ruling limiting testimony upheld. Zimmerman case to proceed, no trial set. A McLean County judge's ruling limiting the testimony a jury will hear in Kirk Zimmerman's murder trial was upheld Monday by the 4th District Appellate Court. The state's appeal of a July 2017 decision by Judge Scott Drzeski put proceedings on hold in the case of the November 2014 shooting death of his former wife, Pam Zimmerman. Absent a request by McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers for further appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court, the case will move forward. No trial date has been set for Zimmerman, who remains confined to his home as a condition of his $2 million bond on murder charges filed 8 months after the victim was found in her East Side Bloomington office with multiple gunshot wounds. The appellate court affirmed Drzeski's opinion that just 3 of the 40 statements from 16 witnesses the state sought to admit as evidence were appropriate for a jury to consider. Some of the remarks dated back to 2010, 2 years before Zimmerman's contentious divorce, and others were as recent as the day of the murder. The state has argued that money may have been behind Zimmerman's alleged slaying of his former wife. Court records show Pam Zimmerman had planned to take her ex-husband to court over expenses for the couple's 3 teenage children. By killing the victim, Zimmerman eliminated the threat of more court proceedings, the state has argued. Drzeski found the bulk of the witness statements about the divorce to be too remote from the time of the killing, speculative, or otherwise legally inadmissible. The 3 statements allowed by the court point directly to Zimmerman's efforts to keep his former wife from testifying in court, said the judge. Specifically, an October 2014 letter to Zimmerman from the victim threatening legal action over $4,000 in child support payments, a statement Pam Zimmerman made to her lawyer the day of her death, and a remark Pam Zimmerman made to a woman about how the divorce would affect the defendant's retirement plans were allowed. During several days of hearings in May 2017, Drzeski insisted that witnesses not rely on their general recollections of Pam Zimmerman's words, but provide specific details of what she said about the divorce and fears she may have had about her ex-spouse. Such an approach was appropriate, and the ruling by Drzeski reflected a proper use of judicial discretion, the appellate court ruled. The 4th District was not without sympathy for the state's position in the Zimmerman case. Prosecutors argued last year that the motive in Zimmerman's case is not limited to a specific time, but relates to an ongoing dispute over the course of divorce proceedings and the child support issues that lasted up until her death. Those issues were not the subject of the appeal, the judges noted. 3 victims ID'd, wounded boy stable. 3 Bloomington men were identified Tuesday as the victims of a fatal shooting Monday in the 300 block of Riley Drive, Bloomington, and a 4-year-old boy wounded in the incident was listed in stable condition. McLean County Coroner Kathy Davis identified the 3 as Corey D. Jackson, 22, Nathaniel A. Pena, 22, and Juan C. Perez Macedo, 33. Preliminary results from autopsies Tuesday indicated they succumbed to injuries from being shot, but toxicology test results are pending. Bloomington Police spokesman Elias Mendiola said in a news release. Police were called to 311 Riley Drive at 2:43 p.m. Monday after receiving a report of a person being shot. Mendiola said police encountered a very chaotic scene. The building was evacuated, and residents were not allowed to return to their homes. They put them up in hotels, said Chris Bauman, who lives near the scene of the fatal shootings at the Fairway Apartments. They wouldn't let them back in. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers also was at the scene Tuesday, but declined comment while he was there. Police did not release any new information on a potential motive. No arrests have been made. Bauman said detectives stopped by his house early Tuesday to see if he had heard anything new since the shootings took place. It has been pretty calm, he said, kind of like it was yesterday before it all began. Another neighbor, Robert Grand, who lives about 3 blocks away from the scene, said he is beginning to worry about the neighborhood. I guess I don't pay attention to much news, but yesterday, after this happened, I heard people talking about this happening a lot lately, he said. Until they make some arrests, you never know what's happening next. Bauman said the apartments have security entrances that require tenants to enter a PIN number to enter, but often those measures are inoperable. When they are working, people place rocks or barriers at the bottom to let people in, he said, so it's not hard to get inside, usually. The doors are wood, and if anyone really wanted in, they could probably get inside. The apartment complexes are owned by First Sight Apartments of Normal, which did not return calls seeking comment. Bloomington police flooded the area Monday after dispatch received word of shots being fired. Rescue crews arrived and waited for police to secure the scene before entering and transporting the boy to a local hospital. He was then airlifted to an area hospital. A Bloomington Police crime scene unit arrived within minutes. Davis pronounced the 3 men dead shortly after 4 p.m. Police remained on the scene for several hours, keeping Riley Drive closed about 3 blocks on either side of the complex. I'm from Kankakee, and we have had incidents like that up there, but I have never seen that many police officers ever, Bowman said. Some officers carried rifles, but Mendiola said it was not due to a potential uptick in tension outside the apartment complex. Some of the officers who first arrived on the scene entered the scene with those weapons, but we didn't have any indication there was any tension outside, Mendiola said. The incident was the 7th confirmed shooting in Bloomington Normal this year, and 8 people have been listed as homicide victims. Allison Hugh, who also lives in the neighborhood, was walking her dog Tuesday morning, but looking out for anything suspicious. If I see something, I'm saying something, she said. I think that is where the problem is at right now. There are apparently not enough people talking about what they know. Hugh said this shooting seemed to take on additional weight because a boy was shot. The boy, who has not been identified, was flown to a Peoria hospital where he was listed in critical condition Monday. Family members said the boy was in stable condition Tuesday, according to Mendiola. When people die, that's a terrible thing, she said. When a little boy is hurt and put in danger, that's where this really took a turn. When word spread that a kid was hit, you could tell there was a sense that this has really gone too far. Bowman added that he had always heard that it was Bloomington's west side that had trouble. I guess we can't say that anymore, he said. Housing update loans. Aid available. The City of Bloomington will accept applications for its Homeowner Rehabilitation Loan and Fiscal 2019 Partner Projects Program from July 2nd through August 31st. Applications for the zero-interest deferred loans are accepted on a first-come, first-served basis. The federally funded program assists about 25 low and moderate income households with minor to moderate home repairs. The Partner Projects program provides funding for community partners engaging in public service, housing, public facility, and infrastructure projects. An informational meeting on it will be from 10 a.m. to noon, July 20th, in the Hepperly Conference Room at the Government Center, 115 East Washington Street, Bloomington. Attendance is recommended but not mandatory. Registration is required at jtoney@cityblm.org or 309-424-2342. Applications for both programs are available at www.cityblm.org and at the Community Development Department in the Government Center. Road closures. Emerson Street, Bloomington. Emerson Street between Towanda Avenue and Riser Avenue is closed to motorists for street repairs. McGregor Street, Bloomington. McGregor Street between Cloud Street and Croxton Avenue is also closed to motorists for street repairs. Drivers should use alternate routes. Today's Flick Fact. Can you name the popular Bloomington Tavern and Pub that was once a grocery store? The answer is Western Tap, a burger place and watering hole at 1301 Northwestern Avenue on the city's west side, was in its beginning a neighborhood grocery store in front with a smaller area in back for popping a fermented beverage or two. Until the late 1960s, most neighborhood grocery stores had such an area, a trend that is returning. Current day Hy-Vee, as an example, has an adult beverage area. Today in history. Today is Wednesday, June 20th, the 171st day of 2018. There are 194 days left in the year. And today's highlights. On June 20th, 1893, a jury in New Bedford, Massachusetts, found Lizzie Borden not guilty of the axe murders of her father and stepmother. And your thought for today? A man's errors are his portals of discovery. And that was said by James Joyce, Irish poet, who lived from 1882 to 1941. Butler can attend review. Judge, CIAM owner, can join lawyers at facility to eye records. A McLean County judge ruled Tuesday that John Y. Butler may accompany his lawyers to a state police facility to review thousands of documents seized by the state in his theft case involving the city-owned arena. Butler faces more than 40 criminal charges related to the 10 years of his management firm, Central Illinois Arena Management, supervised operations of the former U.S. Cellular Coliseum, now known as Grossinger Motors Arena, and under different management. The charges include theft of public funds, wire fraud, and tax-related offenses. Four others management officials were charged in the 111 indictments returned in September of 2017. A judge later dismissed theft charges against former CIAM general manager Bart Rogers, but theft and other felony charges remain against CIAM employees Paul Grazer, Kelly Klein and Jay Leish. In May, lawyers for Butler complained that the state had barred Butler from accompanying his lawyers to an Illinois State Police facility in Pontiac, where about 70 boxes of Butler's business records are stored. The defense team intends to review the documents to determine what materials may be needed for their case. First Assistant State's Attorney Brad Rigdon argued Tuesday that defendants represented by lawyers do not have a right to access discovery materials. Associate Judge Bill Yoder ruled that Butler may attend the meeting with his lawyers, but directed attorneys for both sides to craft a plan for how that will be accomplished. A final order by Yoder will include the specific details. An August 7th hearing is set to review the document issue and to hear arguments on several pending defense motions. Defense lawyer Stephen Beckett described the case against Butler as a barn burner of a case that is expected to involve a lengthy and complex trial. Butler's legal team, that includes Bloomington lawyer Scott Cording, has filed motions to dismiss the charges and squash the indictments. The state and three of Butler's co-defendants may be in the process of finalizing plea agreements. Upcoming court dates for Leish, Klein, and Grazier indicate plea deals may be presented. Rape charges dismissed against murder suspect. A judge dismissed sexual assault charges Tuesday against a Bloomington man who also faces murder charges in the unrelated stabbing death of a woman in a hotel room on the city's west side. Kyle Breston, 33, was accused of raping a minor girl at his home during her spring break in 2017. And McLean County Assistant State's Attorney Jacob Harlow said the state intends to refile the charges to address the judge's concerns. The accusations were leveled by authorities after investigators found pornographic images of the girl on Breston's cell phone during their probe into the killing of Shannon Hastings. The 27-year-old victim had been stabbed more than 100 times, according to police. On Tuesday, Judge Robert Freitag dismissed 16 charges accusing Breston of sexual assault in March 2017. The judge agreed with arguments by defense lawyer Stephanie Wong that the state is required under recent Illinois case law to provide specific details of how a perpetrator used a position of authority, trust, or supervision to sexually assault a victim. In Breston's case, Harlow argued Breston served as mentor and caregiver to the minor, who was allowed by her mother to stay with Breston. He met the girl at a local church where he and the alleged victim's father attended meetings for substance abusers, according to police. The defendant used a similar position with a second victim in a situation for which he has not been charged, said Harlow. Seven charges accusing Breston of child pornography and four counts of sexual abuse remain pending. A July 30th hearing is set to review the status of the case. Frontier Airlines back at CIRA. Low fares, nonstop flights to Orlando and Denver announced. Frontier Airlines is returning to Central Illinois Regional Airport, adding nonstop flights to Denver and to Orlando, Florida. CIRA officials made the announcement Tuesday morning at an airport news conference. Frontier will begin its Denver service on September 24th, said Airport Executive Director Carl Olson. New flights to Orlando will start on October 2nd. We are proud to bring our unique brand of low fares done right back to Bloomington, said Jonathan Freed, Director of Corporate Communications for Frontier. Normal Mayor Chris Koos was among area elected officials, current and former Bloomington Normal Airport Authority board members and others who were present to hear the announcement. "It's great news that we're getting more air service, and the flight to Denver is key. That's really going to draw people to this airport. It's a big win for the airport and the community." The airline previously provided air service to Denver from 1997 to 2001. Later, it returned to the airport with service to Denver and Orlando, but that service ended in 2014 and 2015, respectively. "At the time, they were doing very well," said Olson. "They had 90% of their seats filled. But the reason they left is that they had a cost structure that was very hard for them to be profitable to the level they wanted. They since have restructured and taken on a new business model, and for that reason they are able to offer these lower fares." For the week of September 24th through 28th, Frontier's new flights to Denver will depart at 5:21 p.m. Monday and Friday, arriving at 6:45 p.m. at Denver International Airport, and departing Denver at 1:21 p.m. and arriving at CIRA at 4:31 p.m. on those 2 days. Flights to Orlando will leave at 10 a.m., arriving at 1:30 at Orlando International Airport on Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday, and will depart from Orlando at 4:25, arriving at 5:50 on those days. To celebrate its return to CIRA, Frontier is offering $39 one-way fares, but they have to be purchased by Wednesday, June 20th. Purchasers must fly between October 2nd and November 14th. Fares, like any airline, fluctuate a little bit. "Because we are a low-cost carrier, our fares are always low," said Freed. "So the $39 introductory fare that you're seeing today won't be the last time you see fares as low as this. We're constantly running sales. Our business model is engineered to offer low prices consistently at all times," he added. And here's your 5-day forecast for Bloomington Normal today. Showers and storms are likely. High of 83, low of 67. Thursday, showers and storms are likely. High 79, low 65. Friday, showers and storms are likely. High of 78, low of 63. Saturday will be mostly cloudy, with a high of 78 and a low of 64. And Sunday will be partly sunny, with a high of 80 and a low of 64. Irving Street reconstruction. Workers start early stage of reconstructing Irving Street in Normal on Tuesday. The work began earlier this month, and Irving Street will be closed to all traffic between Fell Avenue and the alley west of Fell. Property access will be maintained from the south via the alley, and the southbound lane of Fell at Irving may be closed at times during the project. This construction is expected to last about 2 months. We'll now take a short break and then return with the second half hour of the Pantograph, dated Wednesday, June 20th, 2018. Please stay tuned.